When you read the news about refugees, the ones crossing the border from Mexico or the ones trying to cross the Mediterranean in rickety boats, you realize that people are frequently on the move in the world. It's not new. Recent case in point, the city of Lewiston, Maine, population counts show about a sixth of its population is now made up of Muslims from Africa. They came as refugees, and as the title of Cynthia Anderson's book puts it, they are home now. The book is subtitled How 6,000 Refugees Transformed an American Town. Cynthia Anderson grew up in Western Maine and now splits her time between Maine and Massachusetts, where she teaches writing at Boston University. Cynthia's own writing has appeared in a number of publications before the publication of Home Now. Cynthia Anderson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So Lewiston was the big town when you were growing up. Tell us about those days and its importance to you and your family.
Right. So when I was growing up, Lewiston was the center of the world. My family often drove there from our village upriver to visit family and to shop. And in the 70s, Lewiston was at the tail end of its heydays, really. The sidewalks were crowded with families and couples, and we'd shop at the department stores on downtown Lisbon Street, which was Lewiston's main street. And the salespeople in the stores spoke English to us and French to each other because Lewiston was a Franco-American town, had been for probably 25 years since the first, well before that, the first French Canadians emigrated to work in the textile mills on the Lewiston side of the river and the shoe factories on the other. So it was a busy, bustling, vibrant place. It was already beginning its decline, but as a young kid, I didn't know it. My sister didn't know it. So to us, it was just a really exciting, fabulous place to be.
So how did Lewiston become a magnet for refugees, and about when did this get started?
Right. So after the mills started to close and the factories to shut down, Lewiston became, like many industrial towns and cities across the United States, quieter and quieter. The young were leaving, and so population dropping. And that meant that, especially in the downtown area, as has often been the case, there was a whole lot of open housing. And when a few Somali families, this would have been 2001, a few Somali families had wound up in Portland, Maine, which is about probably 40 miles south of Lewiston. And then when friends and relatives went to join them, it became clear that Portland had a housing shortage. And so officials from Portland kind of got together with those in Lewiston and decided, well, let's, you know, suggest these folks head up to Lewiston. So that was just a very small handful of families. But before very long, friends and relatives were beginning to join those folks in Lewiston. The triple and quadruple deckers in the downtown area were filling up. So that by early 2002, more than 1,000 refugees had moved to Lewiston, with more arriving weekly by bus.
Now, as a result, as you point out in Home Now, Lewiston is a bit of a livelier place than it was 20 years ago, but not like when you were a kid.
Oh, right. It's a very different city from when I was a kid. Partly because the economy of Lewiston has really changed. It's a post-industrial economy, more service-based, but also it's different, and yet it's the same in the sense that it again feels like a vibrant place. So the piece that I didn't mention yet is that really through the 80s and the 90s, Lewiston began to feel like a bit of a ghost town. It was, especially, again, that downtown area, felt, you know, like it didn't have a whole lot going on for a number of years. And that slowly began to, there was a small, a small revitalization in the 90s. But things really started to change in the 2000s when the first Somalis came to town and were followed probably 7 or 8 years later by asylum seekers, also from Africa, from places like Congo, Djibouti, Chad, Sudan, Angola.
So they are all African cultures, but it sounds like different cultures from Africa.
Right. So you were saying in your intro, I think you said that one in six, which is roughly right, of Lewiston's residents are new immigrants. They are not all Muslim. It's probably at this point about 2/3 to 3/4 would be Muslim. The rest are Christian from mm-hmm. some of those other countries that I mentioned.
Okay. I appreciate the correction on that to understand. They're all from Africa, but they're not all Muslims, 2/3 about Muslims. Cynthia, you write of a bit of a transition within yourself. I mean, how has the way you view the story changed since you started reporting on it?
Yeah, so there were kind of two main reasons why I decided to write the book, and you just touched on one of them. One was that when I first started reporting on Lewiston 12 years ago, I had some misconceptions, I guess, some misconceptions about Islam, about Muslim gender relations in particular, and perhaps too about the nature of refugees. So I think part of why I wound up writing Home Now was that in reporting, and I should say parenthetically, I guess, that I had been doing magazine pieces on the city for years and years before I decided to write the book. I probably started writing about Lewiston in the mid-2000s, and my interest only grew as my relationships with folks deepened over time, and I kept going back. And I kept going back because I found myself surprised. And one example is the, as I mentioned, the relationships between men and women, and in fact, how very strong many of the Somali women I was meeting were. They were founding agencies and going to work and really becoming leaders in the community, in the new immigrant community, but also in the wider community of Lewiston. And as a Westerner, growing up, I had not imagined that that would be the case. And although I had traveled in Muslim countries before I started writing and during the time I was had been writing about Lewiston, I did not, and so I knew Islam is variously practiced depending on where you are in the world. I hadn't really formed any close relationships with Muslims until I started writing about Lewiston.
So I mean, obviously, strong people, good people, learning their way in a country that is still relatively new to them. We haven't talked yet about the opposition that came. I mean, it was fairly stiff at times, and still is at times. It sounds like.
So the opposition is perhaps less than has been reported by news media. You know, the nature of news being what it is, and sort of what gets reported. Slow forward progress often doesn't, and so that sort of actually brings me, you know, to the second reason why I wrote Home Now. And it's because I came to see Lewiston as a place where people of hugely disparate backgrounds were somehow finding accord. And, you know, that seemed especially important to me given our national divisiveness right now. I saw Lewiston as a place where folks were learning how to cross, to talk across really, you know, significant differences. You know, it's not utopia. There have been a lot of challenges, economic and cultural challenges in Lewiston, especially early on. And you're right that there is a sizable minority of Mainers who do not like what's happening there at all. I included their voices in Home Now because it seemed important to hear, you know, hear their perspective, especially given what's going on nationally. You know, I don't mean to imply that the book is completely objective. I own my bias in the book as a, you know, non-party affiliated, but someone who is socially progressive, and my overall take, having spent thousands of hours in Lewiston, is that overall the city's newcomers have certainly revitalized the city. But it's important to listen to the views of the anti-Islamists because, you know, we need to understand where they're coming from. So, yes, there has been opposition, and there was more vociferous opposition early on. I don't know how much you want me to go into it, but there was...
Well, let's go back to what the mayor of Lewiston said in 2002. This is pretty early in the game.
Yeah, so that was a mayor in October 22, I think. October 2002. He sent, that was Mayor Raymond, and he sent an open letter to the Somali community asking them to tell their fellow refugees asking them to ask their fellow refugees to stop relocating to Lewiston because he said he was representing the view of the consensus of the people in Lewiston that the city and its resources were becoming overwhelmed. And, you know, it was, arguably not the most diplomatic letter. And was at a time when, you know, the city was still struggling. There were a couple of reasons why, probably most importantly of which was that folks who were relocating then were coming as secondary resettlers, so that the federal monies that are set aside for refugees when they first arrive the money did not follow folks to Lewiston. So there was some scrambling, before folks found jobs, and which, you know, the majority of working age new immigrants in Lewiston now do have. But there was a period where they were depending on city resources. That was a tough time, and it was during that time that Raymond wrote his letter, and that triggered a pretty strong backlash. Partly I think because in the national media he was portrayed, portrayed as a bigot and a racist, and that unfortunately drew which he I think isn't and wasn't, but the tenor of the letter was lacked sufficient warmth that people took it that way, and so wound up drawing a whole lot of haters and white supremacists, and one group in particular, it's called the World Church of the Creator, decided they would stage a white supremacist rally in Lewiston, which then, which they did do, sort of a handful of people from that group showed up, and maybe 40 or 50 folks showed up for that. And meanwhile, across town at Bates College, there was a counter demonstration in support of new immigrants of about 4,000 people.
So wow.
That, you know, and you know, that's the kind of thing, I guess, to sort of circle back again to why I wrote the book, you know, that did not get really reported on, right? The huge counter rally and the demonstration and the gigantic show of support that, I mean, it was tremendous. What got focused on was the, you know, the white supremacists coming to town, which turned out to be, you know, amount to almost nothing. And unfortunately, you know, that's been, a lot of times, that's been the kind of coverage that, you know, that Lewiston has gotten. And that, again, is partly why I wanted to write the book, because I think it's just, it's really important to try to step aside from this left-right bifurcation we have in the U.S. right now, and to, you know, figure out what we have in common. I mean, certainly in Lewiston, folks are figuring that out, right? I mean, the you know, so much evidence points toward that, not least of which is the recent election of a Somali-American woman to the city council 3 weeks ago. First, the youngest person elected and also the first Somali-American woman, first Somali-American elected to any office. There have been people appointed to office, other offices in Lewiston, but this is the first person who was elected by, I might add, a 70% majority.
Well, that is impressive. Let our listeners back into what we're talking about here. Cynthia Anderson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a writer from New England who grew up in Western Maine, who's been watching as the big town of her youth, Lewiston, Maine, has been transformed over the years by the arrival of refugees and immigrants from Africa. Her book is called Home Now, How 6,000 Refugees Transformed an American Town. It's a conversation you're welcome to join on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's talk about some of the individuals, because this is not just about general trends. We get to meet some people in the book. Nasafari Nahumure is the first person profiled. She was 17 years old at the time. Where was she born?
Right. So Nasafari is a Congolese American who was born in Rwanda in a refugee camp, and whose father was separated from the family because one day when he was driving the family's cattle to market, the group he was with was ambushed by militants, and Norbert, his name is Norbert, was essentially jailed. Was more than that, but wound up in jail and had a really harrowing many, many months. And then during that time, Nasafari's mom, who was pregnant with Nasafari, had to leave the village where they'd been living, and as I said, wound up in a refugee camp, and ultimately made her way back to the grandparents in Rwanda, but meanwhile, the family had been separated and were not reunited for a long time until Norbert wound up in the United States and was able to bring the rest of the family to the U.S. So, yeah, a really long journey that those folks made to get here. And I'm remembering now the refugee camp. I'm not sure, actually. It's possible that was in Congo. It was either in Congo or across the border in Rwanda.
Well, because of the likes of Nasafari, I mean, Lewiston, as you point out, is younger than it has been in decades. And
oh, yeah.
How does that compare to the trend in the rest of the state of Maine?
Well, yeah. So, absolutely. Lewiston is one of the youngest cities in Maine now, with one in four school kids in the Lewiston school system. Nasafari is now out of Lewiston High School. She's gone off to college now. But, yeah, so one in four kids is new immigrant, generally, yes, from Africa. And new immigrant kids are heading off to college in ever-rising numbers. And, you know, the big question for Lewiston right now is whether kids who are heading off to college will, you know, hopefully, will they come home, come back? Will they make lives? Will there be enough living wage jobs, you know, to hold them in the town? And, of course, that's a question not just for new immigrant kids, but all kids. So, yeah, very young population.
So Nasafari represents the young, but for the people already adults in the book, Fatuma Hussein is the present. I mean, talk about how she serves the community.
Right. So Fatuma Hussein is, as I mentioned earlier, there are three women in the book. Nasafari is one of them, kind of navigating the whole college process, navigating her parents' anxieties about her going away. She wants to go to school. She's a really good student, wants to go to school in New York City, and her folks are, you know, strong Christians, strong evangelicals, aren't really sure they want her in New York, and so there's a lot of push-pull there. Fatuma has been, you know, one of the earliest families to live in Lewiston. She founded United Somali Women very early on, like 2002, to help incoming women, new immigrant women, and particularly Somali, but also other from other African nations and other immigrants generally, understand their rights in the United States. The United Somali Women is now known as the Immigrant Resource Center of Maine, and so serves both genders now. You know, Fatum is you know, she's become a spokesperson for the community. For all new immigrants in Maine, really. She's often in Augusta at the State House testifying offering her voice. And she, as we came up on the 2016 election and in its aftermath, she's become also spokesperson for Muslims and sort of a, you know, I think to some extent, from her perspective, you know, the mandated emissary of Muslims in Maine.
She's like the designated Muslim Mainer for political and media purposes.
You know, I think so. I think that would probably not be too far from how she would describe herself right now. You know, and so she's really juggling a lot of roles. She's juggling a really significant role as a community leader and running a big nonprofit. She's still a strong women's advocate, advocating against FGM, which is female genital mutilation, of course, in Augusta. And she's also the mother of eight kids. So Fatuma is a really busy woman. And, so she carries a major thread in the book. Nasafari carries another. And then there's a third young woman, a single mom, Jamila Laleem, who carries a third, and then there are two men who I also follow, one a Somali refugee and another Congolese. And then there are secondary threads held by a couple of anti-Islamists and others held by longtime Mainers. But those five folks are the primary narrative.
Cynthia, I think you point out in the book, this is the one congressional district in New England that went for Trump. Did people notice changes right after the election?
Do you mean did people notice? I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Was there
that.
Some acting out, some demonstrations of people who felt emboldened in their dislike of the refugees?
Oh, I see. Well, I think in the... certainly, as the election approached, there was, I think, a rise in anti-Muslim sentiment probably around the state. Donald Trump had held a rally in next door in Lisbon. So Lewiston and Auburn are the sister cities, but another town close by is Lisbon. And Donald Trump came to town, I believe it was in October of 2016. I think there was, going into the election, there was a lot of trepidation on the part of refugees. And coming out the other end, a lot of fear about what would happen to Muslims. You know, social media erupted in rumors about Muslims having to register, Muslims having to wear bracelets, you know, Muslims being ousted from the country. And, you know, fortunately, nothing dire like that happened, although there were incidents, there were other incidents. So, for example, before break, we were talking about the five folks who carry the main threads in the book. And one of them, a young Somali refugee and single mom, was right after the election. It was either right before, I think it was right after the election, was coming home from work to go home and make chicken for lunch, and someone sort of rushed her in the crosswalk, a driver came by and yelled out, you know, for her to take off her hijab. There were some things like that. And then I think, you know, things quieted down. And, you know, it was really interesting because not very long at all after the election, there was, to me, a really strong sense among newcomers in Lewiston, including Muslim refugees, of you know, getting back to daily life, you know, going to school, going to community college, or, you know, heading off to work, you know, taking care of the kids. You know, I'll tell you something, to the point that in the aftermath of the election, when there was just a lot of upset among people who hadn't voted for Donald Trump, that Lewiston was actually a place where I wanted to be, really wanted to be, because there was a sense of forward motion. And, you know, I thought a lot about that since then. I wound up, it just happened that I'd been scheduled to give a workshop, a writer's workshop in Lewiston not long at all after the election. And my sister came and helped me out with that. And we both had a really similar reaction, which was, wow, I mean, like a lack of rancor and a really strong sense of moving forward. And I think the reason for that is many of these folks have, I can only say they certainly have huge resilience, but there's also perspective that they bring where they've come from histories with so much trauma. Almost everyone in the book has lived in a refugee camp and wound up there because of really dire circumstances, and has suffered, you know, sexual assault or other assault, has seen family members die, you know, really, really profound trauma. And I think it winds up giving them a perspective on things in the United States that might be different from what many of the rest of us have. So what I guess I'm saying is that in the aftermath of the election, when nothing, you know, really scary, immediately scary was happening to them, to Muslims, they turned back to building their new lives in the United States. And that's really what I still see folks doing.
We have an email here from Diana in Talent who says, I assume that many people had a misunderstanding of Islam. I see statements on Facebook about Muslims in Congress forcing Sharia law on everyone. What were some of the fears on the part of the original Lewiston residents? Thanks again for Diana in Talent.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, I can talk about Sharia in a second. But to the other question, you know, honestly, ultimately, I think it came down in Lewiston to fear about thin resources, not, you know, meaning that longtime Mainers were going to be left out.
And what was the truth of that statement?
The truth of the statement is that in the beginning, the city did struggle, and it took a while for folks to find their footing, and, you know, things are very different now with I haven't mentioned yet how downtown has been transformed, for example, by new immigrants and especially Somalis opening a lot of shops that had been previously closed. So now you see new immigrants working in, you know, sectors throughout the city, in light industry and in retail, in healthcare, in food service, et cetera, et cetera. But to her question, I think the fears initially were less about Islam among Lewistonians and more about the thin stretching of resources. You know, what I've seen in Lewiston is that the folks who fear the newcomers most throughout Maine and New England are those who don't know them, don't live near them, and maybe have heard what they've heard or learned about Islam online, and don't know that Islam is, you know, really variously practiced, and that Sharia law is subject to interpretation and also is variously applied. So one of the sort of sub stories in the book is that one of the anti-Islamists who runs an Act for America chapter, which is an anti-Islamist group in the United States, there's proposed anti-Sharia legislation proposed to the state legislature and supported by largely by ACT. And so, you know, I follow that thread through the legislature and, you know, open up a lot of these points that we're just barely touching on here about Sharia and about, you know, people's fears of it and some of the misconceptions around that. And some of the really strong feelings that the anti-Islamists have about Islam and Sharia.
Let's take a phone call here. We have Kara and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Cynthia Anderson, the author of Home Now.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I look forward to reading this book. Sounds really interesting. And I'm wondering, because in Eugene, you know, I'm fairly active with activists here, that people might consider the left, and you, I thought you said something about to move forward, we have to get out of the back and forth between kind of hard left and right. So I just wondered if you'd give us some advice towards, you know, the activists on the left of how you think we need to reengage to move forward.
All right, thanks for the question, Kara. Appreciate that.
Yes, another good question. You know, I have to say, left or right, I think it comes down to listening to the, you know, to views other than our own. You know, I talk in the book about, you know, we all have what I talk to my students about is the lens of subjectivity, right? I mean, we all have biases, and it means that we interpret things through that lens, and you know, when we're in a situation like we are now, where much of what we hear and see is biased in one way or another, it becomes really, really hard to counter the bias that we all have. So, you know, in terms of concrete suggestions, I don't really know, other than I do know that we're going to have to start listening to each other a lot better and find what we have in common as you know.
Well, Cynthia, you didn't come at this as an activist. You came at this as a witness, but you'd obviously gotten close to members of the immigrant community in Lewiston. Did that work against you when you tried to get to know some of the anti-immigrant forces?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I've been writing these magazine pieces for years, which were obviously less deep than the book delves. And when I decided to write the book, it became really clear to me, and I think partly because of what happened coming up to 2016 and afterwards, that I had to get some anti-Islamist voices into the book. And honestly, it took a while. I mean, I think people were very wary of me, and you know, to some extent, probably remain wary. You know, I did the best I could to get those voices in there and to represent folks as accurately as I could. And you know, my views shifted on a couple of things. I mean, I certainly, you know, certainly overall, I still think what's happening in Lewiston is wholly revitalizing and a good force. It's not the only way to bring back an old mill town, factory town, but it's certainly one of them, and it's working in Lewiston. Does that answer your question?
Oh yeah, it does. How much integration do you find between old Lewiston and new Lewiston, and you know, since the change began, since people started arriving in 2002?
So you know, I think there's distance to go there. I mean, I think, you know, one of the places where you see a lot of integration and a lot of community forming is schools. And part of the reason for that, obviously, is the kids. Sports have been a huge unifier. The 2015 soccer team, high school boys soccer team, took the state championship, and that was a really big deal. That was the first time Lewiston ever won the state championship in soccer, and that was with a team that was predominantly new immigrants, and the town really, you know, really rallied around those kids, and Lewiston loves its sports, has always loved its, you know, football, hockey, basketball, and you know, now it has soccer in a really, really big way. So the integration is, you know, slow, I think, than a lot of folks would like. One of the big main threads in the book is held by Abdelkader Nagay. He's a Somali Bantu refugee, and he is, you know, hugely interested in promoting more and, you know, faster immigration. You know, I think what has held things up isn't so much sort of sentiment as logistics, right? It's so, you know, even for progressives who are in favor and wholly supportive of the newcomers, you know, how do you actually form community? That is
the big question at the center of home now. Cynthia Anderson, the author, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.